Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Okay. So welcome to our show today. I'm so excited to introduce this guest because if it wasn't for this guest, this show wouldn't be here. I wouldn't know about organic gardening because today's guest is none other than my mother, the most amazing gardener, teacher, and fantastic mom ever. And so I'm delighted to have you here. So I'm going to introduce my guest, Marie Ramos from Long Island, New York. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
Mom. Hi, Mom. Welcome to our show. So our first question that I like to always start out with is, tell me a little bit about your very first gardening experience. You know, were you a little kid? Were you an adult? How big was it? Who were you with? Just share with us a little bit about your first gardening experience.
Okay. My first gardening experience was actually both at my home in the backyard and away from my home in a summer cottage upstate New York. I was the product of a product of living during the Second World War, so everybody kind of had victory gardens and grew their own vegetables, which we did too. So I kind of knew at a very early age the names of what vegetables were and what they looked like beans and eggplants, zucchini, spinach. I mean, I could go on and on, but I had this great aunt, uncle, and aunt up in where we had a cottage, and they had a big, very big garden, and we used to go over there, and my sister and I would help out picking the vegetables.
Okay, cool. So my next question that I go with is, tell us a little bit about what does organic gardening or like earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
Organic gardening is, I feel, protecting our soil and plants and trees from pesticides. And I live in suburbia, and most people want green lawns in suburbia. So I really get annoyed when the landscapers spray pesticides on their property, because very often when the wind blows, those pesticides, the residue comes over to my place. So it's also very bad for pets, and if they inhale this stuff, that's why they leave all those little poisonous flags all over the lawns. I do spend time talking to the neighbors, but unfortunately, they still want green lawns.
But you know, I never realized, like, so the landscapers actually bring the pesticides?
Absolutely. That's what they throw on the lawns. All the different weed killers and all the stuff that, like, Roundup.
That's all. I thought about that, that maybe we need to educate the landscapers.
The landscapers get paid by the people who hire them, so you really have to educate the people who want their lawns green. Right. And they just it's just a suburban phenomena, and it's, thank goodness years ago they got rid of DDT, but now.
But Roundup's pretty bad.
Yeah, it is. So.
Well, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, so then who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
Actually, I inspired myself because you just have to read about it. If you're into gardening, you're constantly looking for information, and the information from everything that in the scientists and library books on growing all say the same thing.
And so is that how you learned how to garden organically, from reading books like at the library in different places?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a great believer in doing things naturally. I feel that way about a lot of things. And so I started composting very early on, and I did things to try and use natural products. Well, here, I'll give you an example.
Okay, great. Excellent.
If you chop banana peels into...
Oh, yeah.
You can do it in a blender or, you know, Cuisinart or something. And you put that on the base of, around the base of rose bushes, it helps them to grow. and stay healthy, and it creates more blooms. So,
So you just chop banana peel in your food processor and then spread it around the, just like right on top of the dirt?
Yeah.
Without composting it or mixing it up, just raw banana peels?
Well, you make a little trench, and then you put the banana peels and cover it lightly with the soil.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Companion planting, so that when you plant certain herbs with certain flowers, that helps your garden. So all these little things that can be done naturally, you don't have to go and buy all that stuff that they sell in the Home Depots and the garden centers.
I actually found some really good organic soil the other day. I was surprised, right at my local hardware store. Mm-hmm. So I was impressed. And I got organic seed starter at Lowe's yesterday. So they're coming around, I hope.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's still aisles full of fertilizer, pesticides, like just that I don't even want to walk down the aisle. All right. So tell us about something in your garden that grew really well this year, like last summer, something that grew last season really well.
Well, growing well, really, it depends on the weather cycle. We have good years and bad years. And, last year, because of the terrible storms we had here, Hurricane Sandy, some of the plants were badly damaged and some were even killed. So a lot hinges on that in terms of what comes up that year and what's going to be a good grower and what isn't going to be a good grower. I basically grow herbs mostly in my garden. And so our herbs are really wonderful plants because, I mean, some of them are fragile in that depending on what weather zone you're in, if they winter over. So you can do things about that. But
like what? Give us an example of something that you would have to do something special to.
Well, a rosemary would be one.
What do you do for rosemary?
Well, with rosemary, you have to dig it up, put it in a pot, and bring it in for the winter.
Dig it up, roots and all?
Yeah.
Put it in a pot?
I don't do that. I take the chance of hoping that it'll winter over. Now, this year is another bad year for us temperature-wise, so... Yeah, I'll be lucky if my rosemary plant makes it through the winter. That's one of the downsides. But basically, most herbs, depending on your time zone, where you are, will winter over.
Now, we didn't talk about where, so why don't you tell our listeners, where are you located?
Well, I live on Long Island in New York State. Mm-hmm. And Long Island, one of the pluses of living on an island is that you are surrounded by water. So basically your temperatures are more moderate than, say,
poor. I always think your winters are cold.
Well, that's because we're not dry. You know, with the moisture from the water creates that feeling. But basically, we have more moderating temperatures than, say, look what poor Boston is going through.
All right.
With 96 inches or whatever in the snow.
So you usually leave your rosemary out, but you used to dig it up and bring it in to keep it through the winter?
Well, you can. Yeah, you could do it. But I leave it out because...
So tell us a little more about planting herbs. What kind of, do they need? Do they need sun? Do they need partial shade? They like full sunlight? What kind of soil do they prefer? Tell us a little bit about growing herbs, if somebody was going to start growing herbs.
Some herbs are sun and loving, and some are shade loving, and some are in between. They pretty much will grow in any kind of soil. That's the good thing about herbs. And the one thing you have to do is rotate them every few years. Also cut them back, some of them. Deadheading is important. So they're all
Why is deadheading important for herbs?
Well,
Do they get
because
little flower heads on them?
they grow, then yeah, it they'll maybe get a they it makes them grow again, like lavender. Lavender, it's I shouldn't say deadheading lavender. You just cut lavender because it's beautiful, and then some lavenders automatically re
Right.
grow in the spring, and then they'll grow again, bloom again in the fall. But I collect seeds from fennel. I like to do a lot of seed collecting because I like to try and grow things for the next year. So,
Do you have to plant fennel every year, or does it come back?
no, fennel will come back. In fact, it will multiply. It's a wonderful, wonderful herb because you can almost use every part of the fennel for,
Really?
yeah. You can use the
And that gets like those fuzzy things on it, right? It's kind of soft and fuzzy, like the middle of it. No.
No, but the fronds are very soft and
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, I guess.
are really great.
And that has like a licorice flavor, right?
Yeah, fennel is wonderful. It goes with a lot of things.
Like what? What can you use fennel with?
Well, you can cook it with any kind of a sauce you're making or a flavoring. It goes
Oh,
great
really?
with fennel goes great with fish especially, and
That sounds good.
yeah. Well, do you want to know what I grow?
Yes.
I grow
Sorry.
fennel, sage, thyme, boral, basil, oregano, marjoram, chives, santalina, lavender, lemon balm, orange mint. Actually, I could go on. And
Oh,
rosemary
my
are the
goodness.
basic herbs that I have growing in the garden. And some do better in the sun and some do better in the shade. And I know you're going to say which one. So
Tell us, go ahead and tell us if you want
most of them do well in partial sun, full sun.
Are there any
They
ones you can't put out in the sun that have to have shade specifically?
not really. No, they almost all could, but I mean, it's harder to grow in shade, let's put it that way.
Oh, well, that's
And
good to know.
yeah. Oh, I forgot good old sorrel.
And what about, did you say basil? Because I was thinking, like, basil can't take any kind of cold, right? Basil, you got to bring in. I always put basil in pots. I don't even put basil in the ground because it's so cold here.
I don't
Right?
bring
Isn't basil really sensitive?
I don't bring basil in and try and keep it going. I like to dry it at the end of the season, and I use dried
Oh.
basil. But you know, today, because of the supermarkets being able to get anything and
Right.
everything, you can get fresh basil in a supermarket if
Right.
that's what you want.
And then tell the audience a little bit about how you dry your herbs, in case they're wondering that.
I dry my herbs on a table. I just put paper toweling out and wash them gently, shake them, and then I just let them dry.
And then how long do they take? Like a day or a week or?
You know, you can put, it's very easy to do it in the oven. Just set your oven at the lowest temperature you can. Most ovens go down to 200. 150, and just put them in the oven, and then you can dry them that way.
Oh, I bet that
But
smells good.
yeah, it does. But I just leave. How long does it take? It can take anywhere from 2 to 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
You know, something around.
All right.
I also plant my edible herbs right out in the back, outside my door, so that when I'm cooking, I can just run out and snip whatever herbs I am cooking with.
I always like that convenience to me. I always think the lettuce, the salad should be right outside the back door too.
Herbs are also good retardants for insects, bad insects, you know,
Oh,
like
really?
mint and garlic
I
really
didn't
are
know that.
yeah. And basil is also good next to tomato plants because the tomato hornworm doesn't like garlic. So things like that. You see, you can do all kinds of natural things without having to spray.
Right.
With that bad stuff.
We always plant marigolds by our tomatoes, too, because I think they...
Yeah, marigolds is very good, too.
Okay, how about, is there something you would do different in your garden next year?
Well, you know, I kind of have to wait and see what problems happen after the winter thaw and what comes up in the spring.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Because if I lose a plant that I really want, I'm going to have to replace it. Or I might have to divide something, or, you know, it just depends on what comes up and what doesn't. Other than that, no, I really would not do anything too different.
How about something that didn't work so well this season? Have anything that just didn't come out the way you wanted it to?
Let me think. Not really. You know, it's really moving things around. A garden never stays still. It's a movable feast. That's what I call it. You always have to change things around, and move things, because things grow and they get over, you know, maybe they're too big for the spot that they're in, or they're encroaching on some other plant that they really, you don't want them near. So that basically is what would be I would change in the garden.
Okay. How about something that you find is easy to grow and generally successful every year?
Well, I love pineapple sage. Pineapple sage is an annual. It's a wonderful. It is an herb. It grows to about 3 feet high, 3.5 feet high, and it's a late bloomer. It blooms late into, at least where we are. You know, I don't know for other parts of the country, where, you know, maybe down south or something. It might be an earlier bloomer, but it has the most wonderful aroma because it smells like pineapple. When you rub the leaves, has a beautiful red flower. And when at the end of the season, when everything is kind of fading, the pineapple sage is really a star.
Nice.
Yeah.
How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
I would steer gardeners away from things that are not natural to our country. We get an awful lot of stuff from overseas, and everybody loves them because, for instance, something like from Japan, they become invasive, almost weed, like bamboo. Bamboo is just an invasive weed, and it's really pretty, but you don't want it in your garden.
How about...
And then if you want to attract birds and butterflies, and that's a big thing now because there's such a problem, and bees, that you want to plant in your garden things that are native to your area, which you can easily look up. All you have to do is go on the internet and look up native plants to your area, because, you know, I couldn't tell somebody in Arizona what to put in their garden to attract butterflies, but that's really important.
Okay. How about, so now we're going to talk a little bit more about what to do at the harvest time. Like, how about any secrets for preserving food or making food last a little longer?
What do you mean by that, making food last longer? You mean in your kitchen when you bring it in, or just out in the garden?
No, after you bring it in, after you've harvested it. Because for me, like, the toughest thing is always all our vegetables come on. You know, I have an abundance of lettuce, an abundance of, you know, either spinach or Swiss chard, and it's all ready at once. And then what do I do with it? So,
well, basically, in yours, give it away to friends. Cook it and freeze it. I do that. I don't put up things. I think I mentioned that. I don't can. Or what do you call it? Putting up. And,
canning.
Canning. I don't do that. I cook whatever I'm going to do, and I freeze it. Mm-hmm. Or if it's fruit, I poach it and I freeze that so I have fresh fruit in the wintertime. I don't freeze basil. I don't like frozen basil when it frosts. That's why I dry basil. You can make pesto and freeze it. That's okay. But not, I don't recommend putting basil in ice cubes trays and freezing it.
Tell me a little more about poaching fruit. What? Because that might be something people don't know. I don't have no idea how you poach fruit. Like, do you boil it, or what does that mean?
Yeah, you just peel the fruit. You can put it in whole, and then when it cooks, when you put a fork in it or a knife and it goes through, it's soft. It makes its own natural juice. That's what's wonderful about poaching fruit. You don't put too much, you know, you have to put water in, but that's all you need, because fruit will make its own poaching liquid.
And then do you put anything with it, like cinnamon or sugar or anything?
You can put a cinnamon stick. No, I don't use sugar when I'm poaching fruit. Now, if you're baking something, that's different. Like, if you're making an apple pie and you want to freeze it, naturally an apple pie takes sugar and cinnamon and all that stuff.
But you just poach the fruit by itself and put the fruit in a pan? So, like, how many, like, what would you put, like, 6 apples in a pan or 6 peaches or, like, a dozen or 2 or what?
Yeah, however you want. You could do a bushel if you wanted to, if you have the room. Some people have big freezers. Yeah. I don't. I just have a freezer under my refrigerator, so I can't, you know, I have to be careful how much you do to fit in the freezer. But you can do an incredible amount of poaching.
Okay.
You can make pear butter or apple butter after you poach it. You put it in the blender and that, if you want to add some spices to that, you do it then. And then you just you can use it as, instead of going to the store and buying jelly or jam, you make your own.
What kind of spices?
But there are recipes for that. Again, all you have to do is go online and look up pear butter, and they're amazing how many recipes there are for. Okay. I just made fresh mushroom soup the other day, and it's delicious. And, you know, there's nothing like homemade soup in comparison to store-bought soup.
That sounds so good, fresh mushroom soup.
Mm.
How about tips for eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? Kind of the same question, but a little bit different.
Well, all vegetables grow at a different time. So you have to plan your garden as to, and some vegetables really don't grow well in the heat. Like lettuce is an early spring vegetable, and then in the fall. But in the heat of the summer, it'll bolt. So you don't want to, but again, depends where you live. And some vegetables grow quickly, and some vegetables, peas are early spring. You really can't grow peas in the middle of summer. So you have to figure out what you want and what you want to grow, and then set your garden up that way. So it's kind of continuous.
Yeah, those are good tips. I'm always surprised that the lettuce, that we can't have like when the first batch of lettuce is gone, like at the beginning of July, the middle of July, and then I'm like, what? No more lettuce for the, like, to me, lettuce is such a summer vegetable. I'm always surprised, but we get a pretty good, some years our lettuce goes longer than others, but, and then the spinach a lot of times will come up here just right out of the snow on its own from the year before, which always surprises me. But then it's gone by the time the lettuce is growing.
Right. But the thing that, again, some vegetables can grow in the heat.
Right. Like broccoli kind of likes the heat, I think, more, and carrots and corn.
Corn, of course. Well, right.
So.
Yeah.
And that's like, corn's always something Mike's always really reading well, the packets squashes, to make sure that we have our season's going to grow.
Your squashes grow well in the summer.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it behooves you to put some squash. And I like bush squash rather than spreading squash because, again, my space is limited.
Oh.
And they have some wonderful varieties now. That was one of my successes last year. I had a wonderful squash. It looked like a little small size of a softball.
Really?
Yeah, it was really good. And of course, as I said before, I love the flowers of any squash plant to cook.
All right, so that was in our first interview that I messed up the sound on. So tell the audience what that is, because they're probably like, what, squash flowers?
Well, squash flowers are very edible, and zucchini and pumpkin. Pumpkin, zucchini, any of the squashes, yellow.
Tell the audience how you cook them, because I know, and I love them. So tell the audience, because they want to try it.
You saute, squashes are very fragile, so you have to be very gentle handling them, and you rinse them under water and let them dry on a paper toweling. And then I make a very, it's flour and water, really, and you just dip, it's not a heavy, it's very more of a liquid mix. And you dip the squash in that, and you just sauté it.
With just a little, like, salt and pepper with the flour?
Yeah, and that's it.
And they're so good. If you've never tried one of these, just...
Right.
Oh, they're just delicious.
Yeah. And you have to eat them really right away. You just, you know, don't make them with the idea of all going to have that about after lunch, for lunch or something, and it's 9 o'clock in the morning.
But that's a great recipe. All right. How about, so I'm just going to use that for your special techniques for cooking.
So, oh, really? Because I was going to give
you. All right. Go ahead. You got another one?
Well, the one that I cook for you that goes, the sauce that you always talk about.
Oh,
that,
the wine sauce?
The wine sauce. So I use this almost as a basic sauce for almost everything. It goes with fish, chicken, vegetables, and if you're a meat eater, meat, and you just put a tablespoon or 2 tablespoons of olive oil and a tablespoon of butter, and you chop an onion, and then you also can add garlic. Some people don't like garlic, so you can leave it, you put it in or out. And after the onion has you've sauteed it for a while, you add the wine. You can use white wine vermouth, white vermouth, not red. Okay. And I don't use red wine for this. Bring it to a boil, and then you lower the heat.
How much is some wine? Like a quarter of a cup, a cup? Like, what's some wine? An eighth of a cup, just a little bit?
Oh, it's like a couple of splashes, you know, just pour it in and you would know. And then you lower the heat and you add the whatever it is you're cooking, vegetables or chicken or fish, and you let it, then you also add herbs if you want.
I was going to say, don't you put herbs in there? Isn't that the secret?
I put thyme, oregano, basil, or sage, or rosemary. Whatever it is, you know, like rosemary goes great with lamb, or sage is great with chicken, and fish is thyme, and any of those things are wonderful with fish. And you just let it simmer for a while until it's cooked. But you can use that for almost anything.
Excellent. Super. That was perfect. Okay. So then do you have a different favorite recipe that you like to cook, or that is the favorite recipe? Or were you going to tell us about the tomato sauce or something else?
No, I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, cool. And then how about your, so we're back to the garden, and a favorite tool that you like to use. Like if you had to move and could only take one tool with
you. I would take clippers, hand clippers, because I do a lot of, as I say, cutting, deadheading, snipping, especially with, and so I would say clippers.
How about, did you have a favorite internet resource?
Not really. I watch a lot of the food programs because today a lot of the food programs, they cook with herbs and vegetables. It's a big item. And so I always like to look for new recipes and things like that. So I like Jacques Pepin and Julia Childs. And so I watch those. And I think those are great. If you really want to relate to the, now there are gardening programs, but
you like the cooking programs more, and that's great.
Right? Yeah, I do.
How about a favorite reading material or book or magazine or anything?
I have a wonderful book. I think everybody should read it. Okay. It's called The Food Lover's Garden.
Oh, awesome!
And it's by Angelo Pellegrini. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'll link that up in the show notes.
And it's just wonderful. Everybody should read his book. It's not new. It's pretty old. And
that's okay. The old books seem to be the better ones. I get a lot of people have recommended those.
The library is filled with books about growing. And there's another little series called The Little Guide. And this one I have is The Little Guide's Herbs. And it's a wonderful little book. It's just got every single thing you'd ever want to know or find out about. And I did want to say something about with kids.
Okay. Excellent.
I recommend highly cooking with children. Cook with your children, your grandchildren, and let them taste vegetables raw as well as when cooking. And kids love to like shell peas or tear lettuce or spin the lettuce in the salad spinner. Baking the seeds of pumpkins and squash. And the other thing they love is to pull a spaghetti squash apart. It's just so much fun for them. I recommend growing little tomatoes so that when they're growing, they can just grab them, pop them in their mouth as opposed to a great big one. So those are things that I think are great fun to do with kids.
Now, we didn't really talk about your background at all. So do you want to talk about being a teacher and any of the stuff that you did in your classroom?
Were
you telling me you had a garden at PS150?
Yes. I started a garden at my school, and we had one big problem is that was watering because we did not have an outside, would you believe it, a spigot to attach a hose to. But we managed, and we grew vegetables, and then we planted some vegetables, hoping that, one being pumpkins, so that when we came back in this fall, they would be pumpkins. But I can't, in all honesty, I wasn't too successful with that. But we did a lot of planting and had things growing in the classroom, and we made at Thanksgiving time, we always made vegetable soup with the kids and
really
had them participate. They cut, they chopped, and then we had a festival of harvest luncheon for the parents, and we served them the vegetable soup that the kids made. So it was a great introduction for kids to know and find out about the vegetables and what they were and what their names were. And it is surprising, and I find it surprising even in the supermarket today when I walk up to the counter and maybe put celery root down and the checkout person looks at me and says, "What is that?" They have no clue.
Oh, yeah.
So it's good to start the kids out at really young.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you want to share?
I would recommend also in a garden is to plant, again, this is why looking up what's native to your area and planting native plants to encourage the birds and butterflies and bees to become part of your garden, because they really are endangered, and we need desperately to have our gardens healthy for all of the animals. And that climate, that we need to work on our climate all over the world.
Okay, and then the other thing we never got into today that I wanted you to tell our listeners about, especially if there's any on Long Island, is tell them a little bit about Clark Gardens, where you were on the auxiliary and president of the ladies' auxiliary there, right?
Right. Well, Clark Garden is a botanical garden in on Long Island, and right now it is the only botanical garden on Long Island. The family who had it lived there until 1964, I think, and then they gave it to the Brooklyn Botanical Garden, and the Brooklyn Botanical Garden kept it going until the late 70s, and that it became a problem for them. And so they sold it in turn to what's called the town of North Hempstead. We have all these townships, and that's who owns it. And we have an auxiliary there. It is an organic garden, as well as a botanic garden. And the auxiliary is a group of ladies who we have all kinds of events and programs, and to raise the events or to money raisers to raise money for the garden. And the other events are informational. We have events that talks on Sunday afternoons and at other times, and we invite outside people who are involved in gardening and all of that. So it's a wonderful place. You can go online and visit it. Just go into Clark Botanical Gardens. And
okay, I'll put the link in the show notes. Yeah. And you also talked about when we were kids that you got involved there because they have like a gardening for kids program in the summer.
They do. They have a summer program for children. And we also have an educational program during the year where the schools come, and they have educational programs for the kids.
They do?
Yeah. Mm. And the summer program, it's all involved in growing, and kids learn all about vegetables, and they all have their little sections, and they work together, and you should be able to, I hope you remember something about it.
Yeah. And the other thing, go ahead and give a little plug for your plant sale there, because that's where you get a lot of your plants, right? And you were telling me that's where, like, a great way to start herbs, right, is buy a little herb plant. Like, it's kind of hard to start them from seed, so.
That's our biggest fundraiser. We have a plant sale Mother's Day weekend.
Right.
And we sell all of plants that are organic. So we do get the plants. Some of the plants come from out on the island, because we don't have the room to grow plants
right
at our garden.
No, right.
And so we use the farms and out on the island for our plants. And we have everything. We have herbs, perennials, annuals, shrubs.
Trees, right, too, even?
Well, trees. And hanging basket. Oh, you name it, we have it.
And they have good prices, right? And then it's a great way to support the garden and education.
And we do. It's a wonderful, it's our biggest fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to share with the listeners, or an inspirational tip or quote to motivate people to reach into that dirt?
I wish I had more. But I think that's about it. I just, I enjoy listening to other people and all about their gardens, so I hope they appreciate this little chat.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing all your knowledge with our listeners, and have a great day.
Right. You too.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day.